Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour. It is August 21st, 2014. And first of all, the first topic, the two comet stories that are making the scene these days, the Siding Spring comet that is heading towards Mars, it gets that name from the observatory. Now, this is also very strange. We have seen this with Comet Ison, which was named after the observatory in which many other comets, in fact, all the comets that had been discovered at that observatory in Russia previously had been named after the scientists who discovered them, except Comet Ison was not. A very bizarre twist in the naming of comets. Comet Siding Spring, also a guy named McNaught, who has discovered many, 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 many comets, and who has his name, Comet McNaught, on many, many comets. All of a sudden, they opt to name the comet after the observatory. This is totally bizarre. So why that? These special comets seem to get that status. And remember now that Comet Ison, which had all kinds of bizarre controversy associated with it. Remember, it was going in a very close passage by the sun. That seemed to be the case that comet was discovered very, very long ago. And so the person who so-called discovered it really didn't get his name on it. Those were the Russian scientists. The same with the case with the Siding Spring comet that is approaching Mars in October. I think 17th is the date when it will actually make its closest approach by Mars. And but anyway, the European Space Agency says that they have a mission called MAVEN. Actually, that's a NASA satellite which just arrived serendipitously. Right before, it's already there observing Mars. It was supposed to be to discover why Mars lost its atmosphere and oceans billions of years ago. And they put that billions of years ago you're going out to explore, you're going out to discover, but you've already decided that the oceans were lost billions of years ago. That's so typical of NASA's baloney. So anyway, this MAVEN mission is going to be in place to observe the comet. Anyway, now they're saying, of course, I announced this last week, that the comet may spark auroras. Now, isn't that an interesting word to use? Spark auroras. That's kind of an electrical term, if you ask me. Are they kind of doing the, you know, when I remember this once, I was visiting some people, and the dog was not allowed in the kitchen. He could sit outside, a little area outside the kitchen where the dog could be, but not in the kitchen or where in the area where people were eating. So the dog looked, gave this poor little dog look, and he'd put his paw into the area where he wasn't allowed. And if the people let it sit there for a little while, then he'd put his other paw there. And then when he thought nobody was looking, he'd kind of like move a little forward. And after a few minutes, his whole body was in the kitchen in where everybody was eating. And that's what NASA is doing. They're testing the waters. Okay, now if we say spark auroras, that a comet would spark auroras, let's see what kind of reaction we get. Well, you get a big reaction from me. Now, let's put this into perspective. But first, let me talk about the Rosetta mission. I've talked about this before. The European Space Agency finally, after 10 years of flying around in space, gets to a comet last May and starts observing it. The comet, as they approach, has a nicely formed coma and tail. That's the cloud around the comet nucleus. Nicely formed, and they come in. They go, oh boy, here we are. We're at the comet. And so they orbit at a somewhat of a distance. And then just a few weeks ago, early August, they move in to where they're much closer to the comet nucleus. And they start flashing photos. Well, wait a minute. It already had a coma. They're expecting this ice ball to be spewing out water and ice to form the tail. And they get there, and there's nothing. It's a hot, dry rock, and there's nothing coming off of it. They have the most sensitive equipment that money can buy, spectrometers, etc. But they got a little problem. There ain't nothing coming off the nucleus. It already has a tail, so when they announce on the news, in fact, this was very humorous, that spaceweather.com goes, oh, well, when it gets near the sun in the next year, the comet nucleus, that is, it's going to start spewing off, breaking off the surface crust of this nucleus, and we're going to see geysers and water, and, oh, man, this is going to be the most spectacular thing since the Barnum and Bailey circuit in 1905. Wow. But, wait a minute, stop the presses, because it already has a tail. The comet already has a coma tail, and it should be spewing water into the air and observable, detectable by the Rosetta Space Mission spacecraft, which is sitting there right there, like nose to nose, looking right at it. But there's nothing coming off. So anyway, the word is, I got an email from a listener who had been communicating with a scientist at ESO in Europe. You know, chat type email, and as a, you know, because they try and do that little PR, you know, to keep the public, you know, like you're talking to a scientist. And so anyway, he finally, my listener, it finally becomes obvious that he's a listener of McCanny's show. The last email he gets from the European Space Agency scientist is, it says the following, I can't communicate anymore. I have a family to think about. That's a quote. European Space Agency scientists cannot talk anymore about the comet they're visiting with the Rosetta spacecraft because, quote, I have a family to think about. What does that mean? That means that they're all sitting there, the European Space Agency scientists, and by the way, they're listening to this show just like you are. They're sitting there in their back room, not talking to anybody else, listening to this show. And they know that comets are not dirty snowballs, and the thing they're looking at, they're nose to nose, there it is, there's the nucleus, it's a hot, dry rock, and there ain't nothing coming off of it. Now, let's go back to 1979 to 81. I'm a faculty member at Cornell University. I'm publishing my papers. I'm seeing spacecraft data coming in from Venus, from Jupiter, from Saturn, from other planets, from other parts of the solar system, the spacecraft which are out in the solar wind, monitoring the solar wind. And I'm seeing the spacecraft charging. I'm seeing the magnetic fields. I'm seeing the magnetic fields around satellites of Jupiter and Saturn as the spacecraft go by, which is caused by the electric currents going on. And I'm seeing this in the data, and the scientists there at NASA have no clue what's going on. And I'm writing my papers, but wait a minute. I get called into the physics department where I was working, physics department office, good old Doug Fitchin, most efficient physics cafe in the world, but protecting. He had to protect the astronomy department there. And he told me, first of all, you're fired, and you cannot use Cornell's name anymore, and you cannot publish this work anymore. And this went along with a barrage of blackball letters that went to the journals, telling them don't publish McCanny's stuff anymore. He also told me I was not allowed to talk to students. And I had to finish out my contract, so they had a woman, a professor, that literally followed me around campus, literally. Her name was Betty Robinson. And nice lady, not too bright, but a physicist there in the Department of Physics at Cornell. And her job was to follow me around so I would not talk to students at Cornell. Bastion of Carl Sagan in Standard Physics, Dirty Snowball Comet Model, Joe Vavirka, student of Whipple, at Harvard, you know, and he was the big shot, very arrogant. But anyway, this is 1979, and so I go over to the mathematics department. I'm rehired at Cornell University, but now in the mathematics department. I continue publishing my papers dealing with comets, not being dirty snowballs, that they're electrical in nature, that the large ones can become planets, etc. And I managed to work there for another year and a half in the mathematics department at Cornell and publishing my papers until the astronomy department and physics department come over and tell them that they have to relieve me also, because they didn't want me publishing my papers with Cornell's name on it. So anyway, fast forward now to the year where 2014, everybody at the European Space Agency is looking at this comet and going, you know, it ain't a dirty snowball, boys. Nope. And they, you know, but they can't say it publicly because, you know what? A lot of their money comes from NASA, a lot of their support, and their ability to publish in the big-time journals. So they got a little problem. So they're trying to inch, like the dog, trying to get into the kitchen a paw at a time, trying to inch in. The only thing they can do is steal my work. That's the only thing they can do. The other thing they can do is try and neutralize me, prevent me from being on shows, which is being happening right now. My traditional shows that I've been on for years and years won't talk to me anymore because those shows are controlled and owned. They don't write their own scripts. Somebody puts the people on there and they have a certain amount of latitude. We all know what shows I'm talking about. Won't let Jim McCanny on the air anymore. I just have become too popular. My work has become too well known. But wait a minute. I have my own radio show. It's heard worldwide. I pay for it myself. I don't have sponsors. And the word is out, including, like I say, those scientists are listening to me right now, like you are, and they're going, wow, we got a problem. But I'll tell you what, Cornell has a bigger problem because they fired me on false pretenses. They prevented me from pursuing publications, and now, after 35 years, they're finding out they were wrong. They got egg all over their face. All the publications that came before and after and up to the current date are wrong. All of their theories about how the solar system formed are wrong. All the theories about the Big Bang and how the universe started are wrong. They're wrong about the neutrality of electric neutrality of outer space. They're wrong. They got a little problem. Plus, in a normal world, academic world, Jim McCanny wouldn't exist. He would have been flipping hamburgers or at best working at as an engineer someplace. But that guy knew he was right. Back in the 70s, in 1979, when I was at Cornell, and I was sticking it in their face on campus. Everybody knew me there. All the professors knew me. Most of the students knew me as a very good teacher. My classes, the people were fighting to get into my classes because I gave clear explanations. I spoke in English. I was bilingual. I could help the students that were foreign in their own language. So, Cornell has got a little problem, and it's going to come back to roost, believe me, both historically. So anyway, that's the situation. We have two comets right now that are being observed, the Rosetta comet, the Rosetta mission, which is nose-to-nose with the comet nucleus, and here's one coming to Mars in which an electrically charged comet, which is what I've been talking about all along, is coming nose to nose, and unlike ISON, which was about 7 million miles away, about 28 times the distance to our moon, this comet, sighting spring, is coming very close. In fact, Mars will be enshrouded in the atmosphere, and it will, as I predicted, have electrical effects, including auroras. So the only thing the European Space Agency can do is try and pretend that somehow an ice ball with a little bit of fuzz around it is going to cause auroras. Okay, enough of that. Very important topics to keep covering to cover tonight. This past week, I did some studies, let's say it this way. Remember that last spring and late last winter, last spring, I spent quite a bit of time researching the chemtrails in Florida. Yes, and what I discovered, one thing is that the planes that were doing the spraying were not commercial airlines. They were not commercial airlines with passengers, I should say. Now, what I've discovered is I've gone up to the Canadian border along the northern border of the United States, and there's a great deal of chemtrail spraying up there, the crisscross spraying. The foam, it's like that, you buy a can of foam at the hardware store and you want to like insulate a little hole in your house and you can't get in there, and you take this can and you stick it in there and you squeeze it, and boom, this foam comes out and it fills up, you know, half your wall out of a little can. That's the kind of stuff they're spraying, some kind of plastic foam expansive thing. And you can see and you can watch the chemtrails develop. They're big four-engine jets up there every day. And as the foam cloud, artificial cloud expands, it expands, and the crisscross, which are probably 10 miles apart when they do the crisscross pattern, completely expands to cover the entire sky. By midday, when the sun is highest, I made some measurements compared to the full force of the sun on a clear day versus the chemtrail artificial clouds. A full 50% of the sunlight that should be reaching the Earth, full 50% of that energy is being reflected off these artificial clouds. We're seeing massive cooling of the atmosphere. Now, let's couple that with other readings. Look at the national, international, but also the national weather high temperature for the day. Let's take today. There's not a single 100-degree temperature, nor has there been all summer, in the American Southwest, where there's drought. Wait a minute, Charlie. There should be 105 in Phoenix, 108 in Tucson. They're dealing with 92. Miami hasn't hit 100 degrees all summer. Wait a minute, Batman. You know, Key West, cool. There's some high temperatures in the kind of the mid-American South. Alabama has hit 100. There's been some high 90s in Missouri. But look around there. They're all in the 70s, all the way down through Georgia, etc. So the average high temperature of the day, if you look, and even those temperatures in Alabama right now could be pushing 105, but on average, the temperature, the daily high temperature, these are the actual high temperatures, range between 5 to 20 degrees below normal across the United States. This is, now let's couple this with the fact that Obama is shutting down all the coal plants on January 1st. What a strange day to shut down about one-third of the United States electric capacity. When, now if they keep this spraying up, I think this is just, the crops, by the way, are failing all over the place. We're going to have a shortage of food. They've already orchestrated a water shortage in California, where a good one-fourth of the food for the entire United States comes from. They are done pumping the underground aquifers. They're dry. So the farms that have been able to stay alive by fighting and bribing their way to get water, they're closing. There's no more food coming out of California. And we're heading down the road to some real disaster. And if they keep the chemtrail spraying up, we're going to be in the coldest winter ever, much colder than last winter, and they're shutting off the electric on January 1st. Oh, boy. I'll tell you, boys and girls, fasten your seatbelt. And then they start the rioting in these controlled situations like in Missouri, Ferguson, Missouri. I'm not saying that the incident, the original incident, was a controlled event, maybe it was, But what's going on now is they're busing in terrorists from all over the country, and these are the people they brought in from foreign countries through the Mexican border, most of them. They're busing them in to continue causing these problems and orchestrating a military police situation in a central Minnesota, central Missouri, central United States, a small city. So at any rate, also I got word this past week that the plan is, and this has been in the news, not just my word, but that there are plans to do mock military exercises. The Mall of America is one of the primary targets in all of the United States for terrorism in a mall. So, boy, that sure makes you want to bring little Johnny and little Susie down to the mall and buy shoes for school, doesn't it? Yeah, just so you can be involved in a terrorist either drill or activity. That's sure what I'd want my kids to look at. No, this is they're ripping this place apart. And the last bastion is the bringing terrorism right down to your local shopping mall. Okay, so anyway, the bottom line here is that you have to become prepared. Don't worry about telling other people down the street because they're completely clueless and have no idea what you would be talking about. So just prepare. Change your garden in your yard into a garden. I know people that have done that. They have wonderful gardens, a lot of food. And remember, I talked about this last week, you do not need refrigeration. Start to learn to live without refrigeration. That's one of my goals is to teach people. And when you go to the grocery store, beware of food that has been chilled to extreme temperatures. It's going to go bad very quickly. The stores do this so it looks nice and fresh when you buy it, but as soon as you get that home, it's going to go bad in a day. But also just to summarize and review this, we are in the coldest summer on record. Now, it's very clear. Let me talk also about the reason for spraying over Canada. This implies that the international relation between Canada and the United States, Canada has to know about this. They have to know that there's United States planes flying over Canadian airspace dumping chemicals into the air. They'd have to be complete morons not to know this. But what happens when the spraying is done along the Canadian border, it drifts down into the United States. The major drift of weather is from the north into the south. And so all of those chemtrails permeate the northern states. And as the weather systems develop, the cooling spraying is affecting all those drift over the entire eastern United States. The Ohio has 70 degree weather. The people are going, oh, that's beautiful out. Yeah, well, wait till winter when it's 50 below all winter. Then you're going to understand what's going on. I got a kick out of this. Spaceweather.com finally admitted, and this must have taken an act of Congress, but NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, which oddly enough rhymes or sounds exactly like the name Noah, the guy of the Great Flood a long time ago. I wonder if that's coincidental. But anyway, spaceweather.com, the Rothschild-owned weather mouthpiece for space weather, announced that, lo and behold, the sun is way below its normal energy level. Wow! What an amazing discovery. Now, I've been talking about that for 6 years, and they finally stated it. They said NOAA has realized it, and there's no anticipation of any kind of solar activity. Whoa, what an amazing discovery. But it's become so blatant that they actually had to admit it. So a public admission by NOAA through spaceweather.com. And all of this phony baloney reporting of auroras, trying to make it sound like the sun is just exploding with excitement and solar flares, etc., all of that I think I've had my effect on them that the people just don't believe them anymore. So there's a credibility issue that the people simply don't believe them. A quick story here. A listener sent this in. It's something I had been thinking about myself, is that when you take a shower or a hot bath with fluorinated water, your skin is the biggest absorber of the environment for your body. And all of that is getting into your system. So you think that drinking water, etc., fluorinated water, you're taking it out with your water filter. But if you when you take a hot shower, it comes atomized or nebulized, is another word, from that hot shower head, and you're spraying yourself, you're in a steam, you're breathing in the fluoridated water. So at any rate, I know the people that purchased my water filters have done it to get rid of fluoride. The new GF filters take out that fluoride in the filter itself. It's the only one on the market that does. But just be aware of that. Now, with all of this good news, I want to tell you something. We have to learn to relax, and we're losing a whole generation or two of culture. Kids today are not learning about a simple thing called culture, how to communicate. This is all being broken down through cell phone, through texting, through people talking or texting through phones to communicate and not talking to each other. So, and then music, the relating kids to traditional types of music, whether it's a symphony, whether it's ballet, whether it's opera, or whether it's even good old 1960s rock and roll. The cultures are being destroyed. They're being replaced by Justin Bieber. Or, you know, come on, boys and girls. I hope that doesn't ever make it into the realm of classical music. But the problem is, through the way schools are operating, the way culture is being operated, the way kids are being taken out of their homes and driven into a school that just dominates their lives, we're losing an entire generation or two of kids to having a culture, an identifiable culture that has value. Just a quick story here. The Bank of America today, it was announced there was a fine. They went through the legal department, the feds got them and fined them $16 billion. This is the biggest corruption on the planet. For all the people who lost their homes due to the Bank of America, and remember the companies that Bank of America absorbed, and then they were doing things like rewriting loans to people. After the 2009 Obama relief package was passed, and most of the people did not know this, so they signed on for a new loan, thusly eliminating their eligibility for loan relief through the federal government when the housing crash occurred. Bank of America had teams of people calling customers to refinance after the date for the homeowner assistance federal packages. But be that as it may, $16 billion fine, $10 billion of that goes to the Justice Department. Wait a minute. What is the Justice Department doing with $10 billion? This is just a heyday for them. Now, what I'm going to tell you, and then the other $6 billion went to investors. Not a dime. Not a penny. Not even a fraction of a penny went to the homeowners who lost their houses. The corruption in the federal government has gone just over the top. As I said before, just take a chain link fence, put it around Washington, D.C., and call it a prison. That's, you know, Wall Street, you know, the financial sector of Los Angeles, the military-industrial complex, which uses 70% of the world's resources. Just put a chain link fence around all of it and call it a prison. The Ebola baloney these guys released today, a doctor in some woman that came back and, oh boy, now they're all better, release them out into the public, and everybody's happy, oh, everybody's smiling, isn't that swell? That is the biggest bunch of baloney I've ever heard. And this doctor, this guy looked like he was under duress. That's the best thing I could say. And he had a line of people behind him that looked like guards. And, you know, this whole thing with the World Health Organization, with the Center for Disease Control, this whole issue of Ebola in Africa is the biggest setup I've ever seen in my life. And these little cast of characters, I don't believe any of them for 1 second. It's all a giant lie. Not that Ebola is a lie. That's a laboratory disease, a new version of it being sprinkled into Africa. Just one quick comment. Hooray for something here. And I want people to become independent. When you become independent, you will become much happier. Water independent, food independent, shelter independent, transportation independent. Simplify your lives. When you do that, you will become much happier because you are not dependent on all the phony baloney going on out there. But hooray for a growing subculture. People are able to find food now, real food, that's organic, that is non-hybrid, and if it doesn't say non-hybrid, it probably is not. So, but there's more and more. John Moore said this one morning. We were talking about this issue, and he said the way that you will find out if something is hybrid or non-hybrid, which is what you want, the non-GMO, the way you're going to find out is it's going to actually say on the package or the container or whatever it is. If it doesn't say non-hybrid, chances are it's hybrid. Don't remember that organic simply means the method of growing. It doesn't refer to the seed stock or genetic strain of what you're eating. But there is a growing subculture of people that are moving everything from South American products grown on small farms to things in the United States. I just bought some peanut butter from a little mom and pop operation. I think it's from down in Arkansas or someplace like that. And these people are doing it by hand. They're making sure all of their input is non-GMO organic. And so you can buy, you pay a little bit more, but then have your own garden so you know that get your seeds, save your seeds, use only heirloom seeds, convert your yard into a garden. Maybe rent a little plot outside of town. If you can have 2 or 3 acres of garden, you're going to have all the food. You're going to be giving it away. And then learn how to can, start producing your own food. And then it's also a very valuable trading item. Say you had lots of tomatoes or cucumbers or whatever grows good in your area. Learn how to trade that. People will get to know. Yeah, that's where I get the good cucumbers. They'll trade you eggs. You know, start to learn who's in your area that has good meat. Remember that meat, eggs, milk really doesn't need refrigeration, even non-pasteurized milk. You have to learn how to work within limits. But in other countries in the world, they don't use refrigeration. The need for refrigeration in the United States is because of the bacteria in the food processing plants, 99% of it. It's not due to the animals or animals who are stuck in feedlots or extremely confined situations. That's where the bacteria develops, so they feed them antibiotics, and so when you're eating the meat or the eggs or the milk or whatever it is, you're having a real healthy dose of antibiotics, of chemicals, of all kinds of other things. So anyway, you can find good food. You have to search it out. And what's good, though, is those subcultures of good food are profiting. They're becoming healthy. And the Monsantos of the world have been put on notice, basically, and they're fighting. They're going to kick and scream all the way down to the last dime in GMO seed. They've been thrown out of a lot of countries, and their biggest profit center is the United States. Anyway, on to the show. I'm going to be talking about distributed energy, and I'm going to be talking about the cost of distributed energy. That's the main stickler for 99.9% of the people. So let me go through some cost analysis. I did some energy analysis on a previous show. I talked about batteries on a previous show. Those are the storage devices. But what does it take for you to undo, to pull the plug from the power company? Well, first of all, if you have natural gas, that's a little harder to do. To creating your own natural gas source is a bit harder to do. But let me just describe your average home system. Let's say solar panels or a combination of wind solar. The price per watt of wind or solar power is about $4 to $5. In other words, if you bought a 100-watt solar panel, that solar panel would cost you around $400 to $500. Okay. What is your energy requirement? Let's take an average family of four. You have lights, you have a washing machine, you have the refrigerator, you have other electrical appliances, you have a television, you have VCRs, you have computers, etc. And by the way, some of the big TVs, even the big ones, don't take much power. The LCDs with a mirror in the back do not take a lot of power. So if you add up all of your electrical use, and we waste a tremendous amount of electricity, but let's say before changing your light bulbs, you're still using the old incandescent light bulbs, 60, 100 watts, something like that. Maybe you have a outside light that's a 60-watt or 100-watt light bulb, flood light bulb, and you leave it on for 2-3 hours a day. Okay, now you add up all of the power that you use, and if you you can either add it up or look at your electric bill. Look at the number of kilowatt hours per month that you use. Okay, so divide that by about 30, and that's your daily usage. That's how much energy you use per day on average. Some days it's more, some days it's less. Okay. Then, if you were going to literally unplug yourself from the grid, you would have to replace that amount of energy. But let's do a few conservative things first. Stop. Let's live without air conditioning, okay? Let's take all of the incandescent light bulbs and change them from a 60 or 100-watt usage bulb. And by the way, all of that is heat that's generated. You're not getting useful light out of that. About 95% of that energy goes off as infrared heat. It does absolutely nothing to light up your room. So if you go to efficient LED or the phosphorescent, little tube lights that look like a little pigtail, then you're going to be cutting that in about by a factor of 6 to 8. Also, if you learn to turn the lights off and not just leave all the lights in the house on, just use the light that you're using. Okay, now you're reducing your energy consumption. If you learn to live without a refrigerator and having that thing going all the time, or if you have a big freezer, some people have a freezer and they buy a whole cow or half a cow or something like that, and that's their meat for a long period of time. Okay, the end result is reduce your energy footprint. And each case is different, but those are the primary uses of electricity. Easily, you can reduce your electric usage by 75%. Just by making a few simple changes. Now, let's talk again about the type of energy production system you need, solar or wind, at your house, at your location or farm, and what do you really need? What kind of electric output do you need? And remember that sometimes it's cloudy, sometimes the wind doesn't blow, it might be for a number of days. So your battery backup system has to accommodate for that. And you have to, when the sun's not shining, when it's not blowing, okay, now you cut down on light usage. You do your book work or your paperwork in front of a window during the daytime. Okay? So there's all kinds of ways to reduce your energy usage now that you're producing your own energy. Then every watt of power is going to cost you in terms of buying solar panels, battery backup, and a bigger inverter or wind generation, etc. In terms of wind generators, the cost per watt is about the same, $4 to $5. So if you bought a 1,000-watt wind generator with all of the paraphernalia that goes with it, it's going to run you $4,000, $5,000. The problem is this. Your daily usage, you're going to need, for the average person or average family of four, you're going to need from 10 to 20 solar panels. You're going to need about three of those wind generators. So just right there, just that portion of your energy investment in your own personal system, right there, we're talking about 4 times 10, it's $4,000. 4 times 20, this is for the solar panels, is $20,000. So your cost just for the solar panels or just for the wind generators, and if you're smart, you'd be doing a dual system where you use both. You're talking $20,000 to $30,000 just for the solar panels and just for the wind generation equipment. This does not include the inverter, which converts DC into the electric system in your house. If you're building a new house and you're out in the, you want to get off the grid, you can go DC. You can find places that will sell you lighting and everything else for a DC system, fans, refrigerators, everything. But here's the problem. Now, the lighting, the wiring in your walls is different. The lighting for DC is much more demanding because at lower voltages, then you have to put a lot more electrical current through to get the same amount of power. So it's best, from many points of view, including a resale point of view, to wire your house with 120 volts, just like the standard wiring. And then all of the breaker panels, all of that is off the shelf. And then have an inverter where you have the battery pack convert through an inverter. It's a piece of electronic hardware that you buy. And for the average house, let's say you're an average house, 2,000 to 3,000 watt converter. It's an inverter. It takes the battery energy from 12 or 24 or 36 or 48 volts, depending on how you configure your batteries, converts it into 120 volt electricity alternating, and you have to have a good one. You have to have a pure sine generator. It has to be, and look on the market, because there are people who advertise a pure sine generator, and they really are not. They're going to damage your electronics, your televisions, your computers are going to be damaged and not work properly, excuse me, if you don't have a proper inverter that is giving you a true sine wave. That's the kind of electrical signal that comes out of a generator, an electric generator that's running and spinning like a gas generator. Now, if you truly want to become totally independent, what I've suggested to people is that you get a propane powered generator, and a large tank could be 250 gallons, 500, 1,000 gallon tank, etc., depending on your how much energy you need. The average person, 250-gallon propane tank would be fine, but a electric generator that's converted to propane. Now, you're going to have a hard time doing this in town, but generators run so quietly today that, you know, you're going to be standing right next to them and you wouldn't even notice it. But hooking all of this up in town could be a little bit of a problem. Also, make sure that all of your emergency equipment is non-electric. Because if it comes down to a long period of time when you don't have electric, eventually your batteries might go bad. Eventually you might break a prop on the wind generator. Eventually your solar panels will lose their efficiency. And if it came down to 10 or 20 years living on your own, forget it. You're going to be living with going back to basically hand tools. So, also, that's one thing. A friend of mine, bless his soul, he passed away a number of years ago, always said all his equipment, his emergency equipment, was without electric or hoses or any kind of connection. And by the way, that's when I sell my water filters. That's what I stress also, is that it does not require any electric or any hose attachments. It's a very simple question. If it requires a hose connection or an electrical connection, it's not for emergency and it will not be there in a case of an emergency. You're not going to have city water. You're not going to have electric. You're not going to have anything. So the gravity feed water filter, which is portable, it sits on your sink, is the only kind of filter to have. It's slow. One of the problems with high pressure filtration is a lot of things maybe initially trapped by the filter, but eventually they're going to go through, the worst being radiation. There are people claiming that they take radiation out with a high-pressure filter system. That's the kind that goes under your sink. But eventually that radiation is going to come loose. It's going to be ripped off of the dust or oil or whatever kind of particle it's attached to, and that radioactive atom is going to wash through your system. Additionally, it's going to contaminate your very filter with radiation. You're going to be building up radiation in your filter system, which you don't want. So don't let anybody fool you into thinking that a high pressure under the sink water filtration system is going to take out radiation. It may initially, but eventually that will flow into your water and you'll be drinking it. So that's just the reality of the situation. Okay, so back to the pricing. Let's talk about the overall pricing of a home electrical generation system that'll get you completely off the grid. And by the way, some people think, oh, I'll sell some back to the electric company. But see, they're going to be paying you wholesale pricing, very cheap wholesale pricing. And you are going to be paying, if you buy electric from them, you're going to be paying top single family user retail pricing. So it's not a fair trade. You have to produce about 10 times as much energy than you buy to actually break even, if that's your plan. To sell a little bit of excess energy, unless you're producing quite a bit, you're not going to make a lot of money producing energy on a small scale and selling it back to the electric company. It's kind of like this. I knew some people at one time, they were going to raise chickens commercially, but on a small scale. So they raised their chickens and they took them to market and they got about 10%, you know, selling them wholesale, of what they would get have to pay to buy a chicken, and so they actually were losing money raising the chickens and selling them because of the low price of wholesale chickens. And so then they realized, after I told them and explained this to them the second time, that if you raise the chickens just for those that you eat yourself, that's the best economic policy, because there's no way you're going to even break even selling them wholesale on the wholesale market. Only the big producers can do it efficiently enough to make some kind of a profit. The little guy just can't compete. So the best thing to do is raise your chickens for your own consumption and the eggs, cows, pigs, food, garden food, etc. Raise it for yourself and forget about selling it commercially unless you're going to do it on a large scale. If you're doing it just for yourself or on a small scale, forget about selling it. And that's the same with energy. If you're producing electrical energy at your home, just make enough for yourself. Don't worry about buying a system that puts it back onto the grid and then you think you're going to make some money. Unless you're doing it on a big scale, forget about it. You're putting a lot of investment into equipment, etc., that is never going to pay you back. So just produce it for yourself. Lesson number 8 on this series of lessons. So, and then that way you will be saving the maximum amount because you won't be buying it at the retail price. Okay, excuse me. So let's look at pricing. As already said, between $10,000 and $20,000 just for the solar panels and wind generation system. Now, this is kind of scary, but what I'm going to tell you is how to reduce these drastically. These costs are what, on the commercial market today, it will cost you. But after I tell you this, I'm going to tell you how to reduce these costs drastically. The inverter is a very good piece of equipment, and there you do want to spend some money. But it's only a few thousand dollars, and that baby is going to pay you back a hundredfold over the years. Over the course of 10 or 20 or 30 years, that inverter is the heart of your system. That's what converts the DC electric into the AC power that drives your house. That's what you connect your gas propane generator to, so that if you're without wind or sun for a number of days, you have a way to charge up your batteries and run your house directly. Your inverter does that. You hook your generator into that inverter, and when it turns on, it converts over to power your house and charge the batteries. The inverter also charges your batteries, and it does it very efficiently. So it uses, as you charge up your batteries, it lowers the voltage and it uses less and less power. So you're only converting power from your light or your whatever your source is, your gas propane generator. You're only converting as much energy as needed to charge the batteries, and it's not wasting any. So you need a very good inverter. It does many things. It doesn't just convert DC into AC. It's the heart. It's the brains. If you add batteries, you have to change settings on your inverter because it has to know how many batteries it has to charge. Okay, now your battery pack. You can get, there's many kinds of batteries on the market today. My favorite are just the 12-volt deep cycle marine batteries. You just stack as many together as you need, and there's a very simple calculation to determine how many batteries you need for your daily usage. Like I said, first of all, you reduce your usage by putting in efficient light bulbs, LED light bulbs, and they're very inexpensive. They're about $5-6 a piece now. It's just these have come way down in price. And your battery pack, once again, it's going to cost you maybe $100 to $120 per battery. You might need 6 of them. You might need 8 of them. That would be a lot for a home system. Then the cables, that's pretty inexpensive. You hook those together. But now, the crux of the problem here, the crux of the problem that's preventing the homeowner from doing this is the solar panel cost and the wind generator cost. And, you know, this is something I know about intimately myself because I have done this. I've helped other people set up systems. I know about large-scale power generations. I know about the power companies and what they're doing and the inefficiencies in delivering power. As I said before, you're paying for about 100 times as much energy as you're getting at your house. About 99% of the energy that's produced at a nuclear or a coal plant, about 99% of that energy is lost by the time it gets to your light bulb to light it up. That is horrible. That is absolutely inexcusably horrible. But you can't have a coal-powered electric generator at your house. You cannot have a nuclear power generator at your house. You can have wind and solar. So how do you reduce the cost, the prohibitive cost of solar and wind generation at your house, to make this system feasible, to take that $20,000 to $25,000 price tag and bring it down under $5,000? How do you do that? Okay, that is exactly what I have been working on. But first, I'm going to tell you a little story. And this is something that happened, started happening many years ago. It actually happened in about 1982. I learned back then, as I was in California looking for investments for some of my aerospace projects that were basically stolen from me by the investor groups and the aerospace companies, the dealing with propulsion systems for aerospace. What I learned is that if there's something good, first of all, the first thing that's going to happen to it is it's going to be ushered into the military. It's going to be pushed into black ops, skunk works in the military, and it's never going to see the light of day for benefit of the public. Second of all, if it deals with energy, you are dealing with investors who don't understand energy. They're looking for a quick return on money, and they don't have you, the citizen, in mind because they want to make money. That's been the problem with energy since Tesla sold Westinghouse his electric generators back in the early 1900s. They have realized that energy is a cash cow, and anything that saves the public money is prohibited. So in with my wind systems, many years ago, I went to look for investors, and I knew enough that I had to look for private investors offshore. I found them, only to have the same people, one by one, go south and disappear. And when I say disappear, they didn't physically disappear. They financially disappeared. And what happened is one by one, they all tried to confide in somebody else. Word got out that they were investing in an energy project, and they were basically scuttled out of the investment business in that project. The only projects that you are going to see are those that don't work, that actually hit the public eye. So at any rate, I can't believe I am out of time. I'm working right now on releasing the two issues that will improve both solar and wind generation, both efficiency and cutting the cost of these drastically for the public. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.